Hello, everyone, and welcome to minute 54 of season 7 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1995 Bruce Willis action film Die Hard with a Vengeance, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me again today is John Parker of the Batminute. Welcome back to the show, John.
Hey, thank you once again.
Yeah, but you know we're not a commercial bank in a normal sense.
I have questions about that bank. A lot of questions. I'm confused about what their operation is.
Okay, well, they don't really explain it well in the movie at this point. A little later, they explain a little bit more.
A little bit, but not enough for my liking.
Okay. Well, that's what the internet's for. You should have gone and tried to figure that out then.
That's what you're for, to tell
me. That's what I'm for. Okay.
That's what this show's all about.
I will do my best for that. I will definitely do my best. All right. So minute 54 begins with Simon and his men continuing to wait patiently and ends with Katya entering the newly opened gate. So, I mean, yesterday we did have a scene with John and Zeus. Today, we're back in the Fed, and, you know, we had a little bit of a hint yesterday that maybe one of the guards is getting a little suspicious as to what's going on.
Yeah, very much so.
Unfortunately, it doesn't really do him any good. Spoiler alert.
Well, as we said, he doesn't have time to even really act on it or think about it, because now things are happening again.
That's right. You know, even he was bored waiting there for, you know, for someone to show up.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of waiting around going on. Well, this is another thing. Was this a pre-planned business? It must have been, right?
Yeah.
So it seems weird then, if there's been an incident, to then not call this off and ring the guy up and be like, no.
How would they ring him up? They didn't have – most people didn't have cell phones at the time.
That's true.
How do you ring it up? You know, you'd think that Felix would be a little more concerned, you know, as to whether the person who's supposed to come in for the appointment is going to get stuck along the way or whatever it is. Again, we don't know exactly how close this is to the bomb site. We know it's relatively close because
it seems like it's next door.
but business is as usual. Well, you know,
true.
I mean, the place is pretty much deserted, but the question is why is the place deserted? You know, is it because of the day of the week? Is it because there's a whole bunch of reasons of what it could be, but we don't know. You know, we don't even know when this movie takes place because we've been trying to figure it out. And you know, at the very beginning, there was a sign about a back to school special, but it can't be taking place in the summer because these kids are all in school.
Well, that's true. Yeah.
Hang on. So then we said, okay, so maybe September, but then September doesn't really make sense either, because this you know the idea here is that it's hot, you know, and so I've always assumed this takes place late May, early June. Mid June, something like that, because the kids are still in school and all that stuff. It's not summer school.
Plus, the aesthetic of it feels, maybe because I'm from England and it's very rainy 99% of the time. It feels very hot.
Yes,
this feels like a hot summer, but it's obviously not a summer, as you say. So, spring. Perhaps?
It's not. No, but it could be early summer. It could be. You know, is June considered summer? It's the end of school, you know, so it's not like summer vacation, but it's summer. It's
it'll be like the last couple of weeks of school.
Right. The cusp of summer type of thing. You know, I don't know. It's very strange.
It's strange that I get that vibe because nobody really comments on the heat that much.
That's right.
It's just the way it looks and the way it's shot and correct. Thing. There's a heat coming off it.
And they're all sweating.
Well, they have reason to be sweating most of the time.
True. That is very true. But one of the things also is that a few weeks ago when John was on the subway, so there were a couple ads there. One was the ad for the Goodwill Games, which was in the end of July. So is it possible that they just didn't take down the ad? Or is it, is it possible that it's something that's upcoming? Like that's.
I think maybe the first is true, but they just let it slide because of the second thing you said. I think they went, well, it doesn't matter because it could just be that's going to be in a couple of months. You're advertising it.
Right. But also that's 1994. So basically this movie takes place in, let's say, spring, summer, fall 1994. It's not 1995.
I mean, that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, we get a shot of one of the goons just sitting there looking up, maybe looking at a clock, looking at something, and then he hears a sound and his head abruptly swivels to the side. And then we see a man walking towards them, from the other end of the lobby. And like a woman passes by him going the other direction, I guess showing that there is some business still going on here.
Yeah, it's
And
not
then
completely empty.
that's right. And then we see a sign that says, please show identification card. And they do a great job of having the camera follow this man, as he's walking across the screen, basically, because it gives us an idea of everything that's there. You see all the couches in the background, you see the heavy set guard, at his at his post by the metal detectors. And then Simon looks over while still wearing his glasses, and then we see the man come through the metal detector in the backwards way, basically coming towards us. And did you notice the sign that's on the that's on the conveyor belt, I guess.
Yeah, the
Right
one
before the
about
X-ray machine.
the cameras and the photography and
That's
stuff.
right. It says no photography allowed in the building. All cameras must be checked. If pictures are taken, equipment will be confiscated.
That makes sense to me, somewhere like this. I'm
Exactly.
not saying it's right, or whatever, but it makes
Well, especially
sense.
once you know what it is that's going on here.
Exactly. Like I mean, I'll be vague. I work for the government. And I'm not allowed to take pictures in the building
Really?
for the same reason, because it's like, well, you could be up to something. I'm not, but I could be.
Does that mean you can't even bring into you can't even bring a camera into there? Like, oh, you have a phone.
Yeah, they don't take phones off you or anything, but if they see you taking pictures, someone will come and be like, "What are you doing?" Yeah. They would know that you had your phone out like that,
No, but can you take
if you
pictures of, is it a question of whether you're taking pictures of documents or whether you're taking pictures because you just had like an office birthday party and you're taking pictures of somebody?
I don't think they'd even really allow that, to be honest. They would be a bit like, okay.
Be
If you
like,
did a quick one, you might get away
pose
with
over there so I can get a shot of the documents on the wall.
it. And I don't even work, it's not anything like secret or anything. It's like it's an asylum and human rights department. But just because it's a government building, they're like, no, don't be taking photographs inside, please. Just in case.
Okay, I guess so.
It's quite interesting as well when he first walks across, just before he goes through the metal detector. This might just be me reading into it. I think he looks really nervous. But as soon as he gets through that metal detector, transformation. He's like, right, I'm in business mode now. So I think he knows that stuff going on is a bit more serious. But I've got a job to do. So I'm gonna go and do my job, even though I'm a bit worried about the situation going on outside.
Right. So you're saying that he's saying to himself, okay, something has gone on around here, and I need to get rid of this guy as quickly as possible so that we can.
Necessarily get rid of him. I think he's like, oh, I need to do my job. I need, because this guy is coming to do business with us. Yeah. But if you notice when he's still behind like the sort of fencey bit,
He's got his
he's like
hands
wringing his
clasped. That's
hands.
right. He's got his hands
Yeah.
clasped together.
It's almost like he's like, oh God, this is a nightmare. This couldn't have been happening at the worst moment. But once he sees him, he's in business mode. It's like that has to go to the back of my mind right now. I've got this to do.
Right, that's true. So the actor who plays this character is named John C. Venema. He was born on the 24th of August, 1948, and he only has 34 IMDb credits. And ooh, beyond that, he didn't really have any parts in movies that I could, you know, that I would point out. You know, there's nothing that really stood out besides that. So he walks up to Simon and goes, "Mr. Vanderflug, Felix Litter, Little, corporate relations. Sorry you had to wait, but apparently there was an explosion in the subway. It's played hell with our alarms, I'm afraid." You know, he's saying this way too matter-of-factly. You know.
Yeah, I thought that. Like, you know what?
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm just running a little bit late because a bomb just went off here. You know.
Right. Like, and we're about to see, especially next minute, he gives away a lot of information.
Yes.
That he shouldn't be. I'm going to just call him it. He's an idiot.
Pretty much.
but I love that. What a great character. What an amazing moron.
He's overly friendly and overly trusting.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think,
which again, I have that problem. I understand his pain, you know.
So this is John Parker. That's what you're telling me.
Kind of, yeah. I'm too nice. I tell people too much stuff, and then I'm like, no, I shouldn't have been nice to
but
them.
But as long as you're not taking pictures in the office, you're okay.
That's all that matters.
Exactly. Now he looks like he's overdressed for this weather. If it is hot, because he's got a jacket, he's got a vest, he's got a shirt buttoned up to the top with a bow tie, you know.
Well, that's another point. Yeah, not even a tie, a bow tie.
Okay, that just means he's a geek. That's all it means there.
Right? That's extreme. Like. That's dedication to the look.
Yes.
You know, mm-hmm. Fashion over comfort.
Yes. But again, you have to give it's the, you know, the costume department that is probably, you know, responsible for this.
But again, when you're a high up person in a bank and you're doing these big deals, you're probably expected, doesn't matter if it's hot outside, you're expected to look good.
True. True.
Part of the business, isn't it?
So then Simon continues the conversation with him and he goes, "I trust there's nothing wrong." And he goes, "Oh no, God, good Lord, no. Safe and secure. Now, you were concerned about a currency exchange, but we're not a commercial bank in a normal sense. We're primarily governments, central banks, that sort of thing. Apart from the depository, of course." Of course.
Of course, yeah.
You know, and so again, it basically is telling us that, you know, he made this appointment however long beforehand, you know, and that, yeah. that this guy is aware of the fact that they're coming to have this meeting, but we're not even sure what they want to talk about, you know, because for him to say that he wants a currency exchange, okay, currency exchange, but we must be talking about a large amount of currency exchange. You know, this isn't, I want to change $1,000, you know, it's, I want to change $500,000, you know, or whatever, you know, that type of thing.
I get the vibe it's more.
It could be.
But like, which is weird, because why would someone in the flower business, what a weird cover story. Couldn't you come up with something that makes a bit more tech? I don't know.
Well, it's the 1990s. You know, the tech wasn't as...
Well, tech was all the boom. The computers were starting to hit now.
It was, you know? It was really just the beginning.
It was the beginning. Perfect. Yeah. Like, I'm one of the guys in on the ground floor. Oh, great. Yeah.
Okay.
A bank would understand that. Flowers? Flower. What's the deal? What's the exchange? What are they doing? I don't understand.
Yeah, that's true. And I love the way that...
But I also love the way it doesn't try and explain it. Because on one level, it doesn't matter.
That's right. I mean, this is a MacGuffin. It's not something that we really need to understand. It's what we need to understand is that... Simon has a plausible reason to be in this place right now at this meeting.
Yeah.
You know, even if, you know, Little is gullible or whatever, it doesn't matter. You know, he was able to get this meeting.
Well, and I think the crucial part is what you said. He's obviously called up and arranged this, I would say, months and months ago.
Yeah.
He's thought long game. Because it would seem suspicious if he rang the day before.
That's right.
But if he's rang 6 months ahead, you know.
Mm-hmm. Hey, come on. That's the Grubers for you. They play the long game.
Yep. Exactly.
So it makes sense. And what's great is while they're having this conversation, if you look in the background, you see the way that the men start moving around in the back, you know, the goons. But that's all they let us see right now. And then the scene changes. We're back outside. And surprisingly, we now see Katya, who just 2 weeks ago, they told us that she was dead, you know.
I'm absolutely in love with her.
you know that this is her very first movie role, and she only has like two others.
She should have stuck with it because she's a goddess. She's amazing. I don't care if she's evil. I love her so much. She's one of the best parts of the movie again, and she's barely in the movie.
That's right. And she also doesn't talk. I don't think she has any lines. She's mute.
She doesn't need to speak. Look at her. She looks like a Terminator. You don't mess with her. She's another one. She looks like she could knock me out.
I'm sure she could. She could knock any movies by minute guy out. You know, no question about it.
I mean, anyone walking like that with glasses on, the shirt open, and a cigarette in their mouth, you're like, oh, I don't mess with her.
That's right. And did you notice that there are like two guys next to her that are in overalls, and they're in the process while they're walking of changing their clothes into NYPD uniforms?
Yeah. They've got everything to perfection here. Each stage of, you know, whip that off. Now I'm a cop.
That's right.
Perfect.
That's right. They do it really well. And in the background, you can see a sign for Jim Brady's restaurant, which got me curious as to what is Jim Brady's restaurant. And whether it's...
Oh, I hope it's real.
It is real. It is real. It's closed up since then. But it is a... it's named after a very famous person in New York.
Oh, okay.
Okay, there was a... I guess you can say businessman. I was going to say mob boss, but businessman.
legitimate businessman.
That's right, legitimate businessman in the New York area, whose name was James Buchanan Brady, who was born in 1856 and died in 1917 at the age of 60. And he was known as Diamond Jim Brady.
Oh, you know that's a gangster with a name like that.
Probably. It makes it sound as if he was Irish. And he was the son of a saloon owner. And he basically worked his way up in the system. He was part of the New York railroad system. He ended up becoming, by the age of 21, he was the chief assistant to the general manager. And at 23, he became a successful salesman for a railroad supply company. And by 1899, he was a sales agent for the Presteel Car Company. And he was known for loving jewels, especially diamonds. So he would collect...
A bit too much by the sound of it.
That's right. He would collect diamonds and other precious stones. And he had more than $2 million worth at the time. And if you compare that to today, he had... basically $73 million worth of diamonds. So that's a lot of diamonds.
Whoa. You can't get that many diamonds usually through legitimate means.
That's right. And he apparently was a huge eater. You know, they say that there were times that he would sit and eat, and he would be able to eat food for 10 at one time.
Whoa. I thought I ate a lot.
Yeah. And apparently the restaurant that he was, his favorite restaurant, which was owned by a man named George Rector, he would always describe Brady as the best 25 customers I've ever had.
Genius.
Yeah. Basically, his breakfast was hominy, eggs, cornbread, muffins, flapjacks, chops, fried potatoes, beefsteak. And he would wash it all down with a gallon of fresh orange juice.
Interesting choice of drink.
Yeah. His mid-morning snack would consist of two or three dozen clams or oysters. Lunch would consist of shellfish, two or three deviled crabs, a brace of boiled lobsters, a joint of beef, and an enormous salad. And
you know what? You could probably eat all this because of all that orange juice. Because, you know,
maybe
it gets things moving.
And then he would have several pieces of pie for dessert and wash it all down with orange juice.
Not more. Oh, not more orange juice. That's his trick. That's his trick. Because most people, you have a glass. You know, you have a glass. If you drink a lot, problems can happen.
That's right.
But if he's planning around that.
Yeah, apparently.
Clever.
And then basically he would have an afternoon snack of a platter of seafood accompanied by two or three bottles of lemon soda.
Oh, mixing it up a little. Yeah. There you go.
And his dinner would usually have 2 to 3 dozen oysters, 6 crabs, and 2 bowls of green turtle soup.
My God. And then,
and then he would have 6 or 7 lobsters, 2 canvasback ducks, a double portion of terrapin, sirloin steak, vegetables, and for dessert, a platter of French pastries.
My God.
And he would finish off...
How was he not like the size of a house?
No, and he would finish off the meal with 2 pounds of chocolate candy.
Whoa. That's apparently ridiculous.
Apparently, gamblers would make bets as to whether he'd drop dead before he gets to the dessert.
I'm surprised he didn't. Like, that's absurd. I eat a lot of food, but that...
And in...
Maybe, again, though, I have the advantage of being a vegetarian, where, you know, everything's not that filling.
Right. And apparently, several years before he died, he had to start cutting down on what he was eating because he had stomach troubles, surprisingly.
Oh, really? Yeah. Never would have guessed.
That's right. And he would be the top of the party with the Broadway nightlife. You know, he would dine with popular society. He would invest in the stock market. He was worth $12 million at the time, which, again, if $2 million were worth $72 million today, think about how much...
Yeah, that's wow. So he must have been one of the real rich guys. You know?
He wasn't the most ethical of people, obviously.
Really?
And on election night in 1896, he somehow won $180,000, which is the equivalent of $6.5 million.
You just casually win that. Perfectly normal.
By making bets on the McKinley William Jennings Bryant presidential election.
I'm surprised you're allowed to bet on that, actually. I thought there might be some... I don't know if there is here either, but like I just assumed there would be some law.
Well, again, it was a little crooked, the whole thing. Yeah, and
it was under the table. Yeah,
he would have shady stock deals that involved Reading Railroad, where he made millions on that also. Mm. You know, he owned and raced thoroughbreds. I mean, it's just unbelievable the stuff that he did. He had a long-time relationship with actress and singer Lillian Russell.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Apparently, her eating habits were a perfect match for his, which I don't know if that means that she didn't eat anything, so it didn't matter, or she also...
That's a good point, because my instinct was, oh, she must match him. But maybe he doesn't want that.
Yeah. And when he died, he didn't have any heirs because he'd never gotten married. Oh. So his estate was distributed to many institutions, including New York Hospital. And
was this something he left in instructions to
do? I assume. He surprisingly died of a heart attack on April 13th,
1970. it couldn't have been anything else.
No, couldn't have been. They say that when his body was examined during the autopsy, the doctors discovered that his stomach was 6 times the size of that of an average person.
How does that even fit?
I don't know.
I wonder if he was born with a bigger stomach or if he literally like trained it to be big.
Yeah, you know what I mean? I know what you mean. I don't know the actual answer to that.
I reckon they probably don't know because you'd have had to do scans on him as a child.
Well, I don't think back then they could do scans. You know, it's like...
Exactly. Right. Yeah. So there's no way they could see how big it was. Now he's dead.
No, that's true. So basically, there was a popular restaurant, in the financial district of New York that was around for many, many years that was known as Jim Brady's restaurant, which probably very few people could eat as much as he did.
That should be a thing you can do. You can get his platter.
That's right. Yeah, I'll have a Jim Brady special.
Well, that'll be $1,500, please.
And do you want his breakfast? Do you want his second breakfast? Do you want lunch? Do you want second lunch or his dinner?
Are you sure you want to be going to the bathroom every 5 seconds because you've drank 8 liters of orange juice?
Yeah, seriously. And then we get a shot of Targo once again directing traffic of all the equipment, and then we hear him say, "Back, back, come on." And then Katya descends the stairs into the subway, and she passes by Walsh's bloody body.
I can forgive her for not being appalled because she's so perfect in every other way.
Yeah, actually,
Something
I mentioned this I think yesterday about the blood on his face. It's actually here that you can see the blood dripping on his face.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
I thought you were just jumping ahead because it's your
I
show. You
no,
can do
I
whatever you
had
want.
actually just forgotten which minute it was in because they were showing the body. So, but here you actually see all the blood on his face, which is very interesting the way that they show that.
Yeah, it's I wouldn't be surprised to find out that when it was like first shown on TV and stuff, that they would maybe cut that bit.
It's very possible. It's definitely very possible.
They don't tend to cut too much these
No,
days.
not at all.
Well, I say that, but I don't remember the last time I watched a movie on television. I don't remember the last time I watched television.
Yeah, I have the same issue. I've watched maybe the news here and there, but not like real television,
No, there's no need anymore. It's not a
Correct.
thing, is it? It's not a
Yeah.
thing. I mean, I can understand people doing it for like if they're into sports, because you've kind of got to watch that live, because you'll just get it spoiled for you if you watch it
Okay,
like the
well,
next
I'm
day.
not a sports fan. For me, the
No,
equivalent
same.
to that is watching the Oscars. I gotta watch it live because I don't want it to be spoiled
Yeah.
afterwards. That's the thing.
Well, I'm the same with I have the difficulty. I'm a big wrestling fan, but it's always on in America, or Japan. So I've got two ends of the world right
Yeah.
there. So no matter what, I usually cannot watch that live. I
I
have no
think you're living in
choice.
the wrong part of the world. So that's the answer.
I am. And it's a nuisance because I wake up and I go, you know what? I'll just quickly check Facebook. It'll be fine. First thing I see will always be the biggest spoiler of all. I'm like, oh, God damn it. And I make that mistake every time.
Wow, interesting. And
But no, I could see him cutting this.
yeah,
Like, they used to be very picky about certain shots like that. I think that might be too much for him.
right. And then we're continuing to follow Katya as she expertly, pulls a huge pair of wire cutters out from the satchel that she has on her back. And very fluidly goes and just cuts open the lock on this gate and just strolls through. And that's how this minute ends, with her just going through that gate.
Casual
Very.
style. That's what I love about her as well. She's just so casual all the time.
Very true. So that's all I have for this minute. Do you have anything else for this minute?
Only I'd like to point out how absolutely amazing the music is in this minute. It's the I don't know what you call that song.
When Johnny comes marching
It's
home.
the
Yeah.
theme. Yeah,
But
there you go.
I've heard that most
This is my ADHD.
I've heard
ADHD doesn't work
well
with
I've heard
names.
that most Brits think that it's the Noah's Ark song.
It could be. I'm terrible with these things. Any names are not my forte. I always go, give me a second, and I have to Google every even like my favorite songs. I'm like, wait, hold on. It's the problem with ADHD. There are upsides as well. It means I can watch something like this, and it could be the 8,000th time, but it feels kind of new.
That's good. That's good.
It is fantastic. But the music, it's the interpretation of it's so
Yeah.
cool as well, because it just with the militaristic kind of vibe to it. I suppose actually one of my favorite bands ever, The Clash, they use that exact tune and beat in one at the start of one of their songs. And they reference the lyrics as well. So I should have put that together that it was that. But it fits everything they're doing. Like it feels like they're even sometimes marching to the beat, even though I don't think they've shot.
No, I don't think they did, but it does seem that way. Yeah. Very interesting. All right. So once again, we'll get into the mixed up script here. So there's just a little part of it that corresponds with this minute. So it says the Wall Street subway station, the ramp is now fully constructed. The dump trucks are backing down the ramp onto the subway tracks. Each driver gets out and climbs into the bed of his dump truck, releasing the tailgate. They drive skid steers, compact, powerful, earth-moving vehicles off the trucks. They drive the skid steers down the tracks. In the subway tunnel with Simon and Targo, Simon is looking down the subway tracks. A flashlight flashes on, flashes off. Now, Matthias. He flips open his cellular phone, dials. Your time has come, Nigel. Inside the drilling hole, Matthias Targo, seated behind the hydraulic drill, operates levers. The enormous diamond-tipped bit lifts and pushes forward into a wall of tungsten steel armor plate. So, Katya doesn't even appear here.
So I'm automatically
out. I can understand that. I mean,
give me more of her. Put Connie, her in the
script. Connie doesn't appear in the script either. You know, so.
Oh.
I guess they just want to get rid of all these the women in the movie. I don't know.
That wouldn't surprise me. Yeah, they probably realized there were no women in it towards the end. They're like, oh wait, hang on, what can we do?
Yeah, we said that she died, but okay, we can prove that she didn't. You know.
But that, other than that, though, that was good. That was yeah. Fine. I had no problems with it.
Exactly. So every Thursday we have a segment called Off the Beaten Track Revenge / Sibling Rivalry stories. So the idea here is that my guests will give some sort of story, anecdote, adventure, misadventure, something that's happened to them over the course of their life or of someone that they know that is somehow related to either revenge against someone, whether it's against you or whether you did some sort of revenge against someone else or a sibling rivalry, something like that. So, yeah, you have a story for us?
Well, yeah, this took a bit of effort to think of something because at heart.
Well, I don't give easy homework.
A bit of a, well, no, you don't. You make people think. Because at heart, I'm a bit of a Buddhist and a hippie, even though I'm a punk.
You're a so punk I don't get Buddhist revenge. Hippie.
Yeah, kind of. I don't get revenge really. I think it'll happen to people anyway. But so I was thinking. I do have a sister. She's older than me. And then, so it's not a specific story, but it's something we used to do a lot, which kind of has an inbuilt revenge mechanism in that I, as a kid, like a young kid, I grew up in Cyprus and we were allowed to just run around and do whatever the hell we wanted out in the middle of nowhere in Cyprus. And we used to play in this abandoned building. It was, I think it used to be apartments that were, I think they were occupied by the army, but they weren't there anymore. So it's just these abandoned buildings. And we'd developed a game which is incredibly dangerous. You'd shoot each other with the metal part of, the internet taught me today. I don't think, like, you probably have a lot of American listeners. The internet taught me Americans don't call them this, a clothes peg. I think Americans might call them a clothespin, but yes. the ones that are like a crocodile kind of thing, you know. So you'd get one of them and you'd nail it to a plank of wood, and then you'd put a nail in the other end, and then you could pull an elastic band, like a rubber band, over the nail and pull it all the way back, and you could basically fire the middle out of other clothespins out by like using the one you've nailed in as a trigger. So you could fire the little metal piece at each other. So we'd always run around these abandoned buildings shooting each other with these metal horrific dangerous things that would stick into your flesh and your legs. But so obviously it would lead to arguments. because you shot me. It's like, well, that's the entire point of the game. So you'd end up just brutalizing each other, which never went my way because she's 5 years older than me, so she could just beat me up, which she would do frequently. But it was a great sort of inbuilt mechanism of, oh, you've hurt me, I'm going to hunt you down then, and I'm going to get revenge. When you least suspect it, I'm going to pop out of nowhere. You won't get out of this building alive. I'm gonna stab you to death with these metal pieces of clothespins. So I recommend all children make these weapons to this day. Do it, everybody. It's great. It resolves all familial issues. I think that's why we've never fought since. Because you shoot each other, you get it over with. You bleed a lot. It's fine.
How old I'm were you here when to talk when about it. This?
Neither of us lost an eye.
I mean, you told me your sister was 5 years older than you, but
yeah. So I'd have been, let me put it together. I'd been around six. She taught me how to make them.
Okay. what a great sister who knows how to teach her brother the right way of doing things.
Oh yeah, we used to do all kinds of weird stuff like that. Like we used to make like our own zip lines. Or as they were called, a death slide. Ooh. And so you'd tie a rope to the bottom of a tree, and you'd take it up to the top of another tree, tie it up to the top. But then you'd take handlebars off a bicycle, and you'd use that as the zip thing to hold on to as you went
I'm
down.
I'm shocked that you're still alive.
I know. Yeah, I did break my arm quite horrifically, but that wasn't even doing anything that bad. That was something really normal, and then I really, really badly broke my arm. But you know what? That shows that it wasn't a real rivalry. It was more of a funny little jab, you know, back and forth. Because when I broke my arm, she looked after me, so it's quite nice. So you want to hurt each other, but in like a fun okay. way, if that makes sense.
Yes.
Because you get all your frustrations with each other out. Then it's all dealt with. It's all fine. Then you move on. And then the next day we'd go back to playing with her Barbies, and I had to be Ken, and nobody wants to be Ken. I want to be Barbie. Right. But she made me be Ken.
That terrible. Means
that's,
sister.
That's really where that the rivalry means, started. Yeah. No one likes Ken. The only time people ever liked Ken were in the new Barbie movie, because they actually made Ken interesting.
Exactly. All right, great. Thank you very much for that story. That's a great story. I don't know why you were trepidatious about telling it. That's fine.
Well, no, I just thought like, well, it's not like a rivalry. It's more like day-to-day rivalry solving,
okay.
Let's say.
That's fair. All right, excellent. So, John, would you like to once again tell people where they can find John Parker?
Yes, indeed. Look up my podcasts, Bat Minute, Hedvig Inch by Angry Inch, and my Ami Minutes. I should probably explain them all. Bat Minute, it's about Batman. Hedvig, it's about the movie Hedvig. It's a queer musical. And Miami Minutes is about the 80s, the lost 80s Taekwondo masterpiece, Miami Connection, which everyone should watch because it's amazing. It's always on so bad it's good lists, but we like it for real because it is good. It's got a lot of heart. There's a lot of passion put into that. And I am the All Elite Wrestling correspondent on the Blake and Sal Show. So anytime there's an AEW wrestling pay-per-view on, I am the analyst on there.
Oh, wow, that's cool. Excellent. So you get to talk about, the actors in wrestling.
Well, you're not wrong. It basically is. It's a stunt show mixed right. with acting.
Yeah, you know? I'm familiar. All right. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Move Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter, you can find me on Instagram. You can send me an email at movierobminute@movierob.net, or you can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. So, John, you feel like coming back in tomorrow to see what Katya is up to?
I'll see what I can do, but if Katya is there, probably. Well, yeah, great. I'm in.
So, until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay!
Yippee-ki-yay!
Marching home again, hurrah, hurrah! We'll give him a hearty welcome then, hurrah, hurrah! The men will cheer, the boys will shout, the ladies they will all turn out, and we'll all feel glad when Johnny comes marching home.